I guess I'm duly fixed up now. So I've gotten the flu bug that's been going around, and I'm very thankful that I have. And some of you might think that sounds kind of silly, but I sincerely am thankful that I've gotten this illness, this sickness, this flu that's going around. There's many reasons that I'm thankful, but I was thinking about this yesterday when I'm in bed, and this morning as I'm sitting in my office and I'm preparing and I'm sweating and my shirt collar's all sweaty and I'm feeling squeamish and weak and shaky, and I'm humbled to know how much I need God to be able to stand here and preach this morning. And I'm thankful for that. Because if it weren't for Christ in my life, if it weren't for me being able to access that, not in some weird way, but just this is what God has for me to do, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So all things that I'm to do, like preach this morning, I can do through Christ. And I'm thankful that I'm sick, because it's very humbling to come to that realization that the Lord is my strength. I'm thankful to be sick, because it reminds me how wonderfully designed the human body is. How God made us and me, and most days I walk around and function just fine and don't feel any physical ailments or problems with being able to talk or stand or any of those things. And so it reminds me of how wonderfully made our body is. I'll get this, and whether it's a one day or, as Dr. Greta said, it's probably a 7 day, it'll go away, most probably. Because God's designed my body to get sick and then to fight that sickness and have it go away. And so I'm thankful to be sick, because it reminds me of God's incredible orchestration of how He made our bodies. Psalm 139:14, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. Being sick today has helped me to know that very well, how wonderfully made I am. Another reason I'm thankful to be sick is I'm extremely thankful. I was reminded again of how thankful I am to have Elder Cal and Elder Nick serving this body with me as elders, because I was perfectly comfortable with the fact that if I couldn't be up here today, they would have handled it just fine. You all would have been preached the gospel. You all would have been, you saints would have been equipped to go out and to do the ministry. And I had no concerns about that. And so I'm thankful to be sick, because if I wouldn't have been here, I know that God's church will gather and worship, and the word will be preached, and we will be equipped. I was reminded of this as I thought about that. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of making requests for you all with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. The fellowship in the gospel that I have with Cal and Nick reminded me of that as I was laying in bed yesterday sick and this morning. The last reason that I thought about that I'm very thankful to be sick is it's not for spiritual persecution, but I'm able to suffer for His name's sake. I'm able to suffer, whatever that means, to preach. And I don't get that opportunity very often. I don't have any physical ailments that deter me from standing up in front of you and preaching and teaching to you. I do it most Sundays and Wednesdays, and so I get to do that. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to do that in a way that's a little more difficult, a little more challenging. Here's what Paul says. His afflictions were different than this. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to be to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full of the hungry, to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I am very content to be sweating right now. I'm very content to be shaky right now. I'm very content to suck on this lozenge that is probably distracting to you all so I can talk. And I don't know if you all look at illness that way. And I can't say that I'm sick often enough to do that. I was just very thankful for this. I was very thankful to be sick and to be able to consider those things. Because it just makes me more in awe of who God is. So I would encourage you all, next time you get sick, and some of you are sick right now, be thankful. Some of you carry sickness regularly. You know, Tammy has MS, so she regularly carries sickness. And learn to be thankful inside of that, I think, is very powerful. So I praise God that I have this morning. And I will stay away from you as best as I can to try to get you all sick. I will attempt not to share. Okay, let's get into today's passage. We're in Philippians 2. We'll be starting in verse 14. Remember, Paul has just encouraged and exhorted his beloved Philippians brothers and sisters in Christ. He's just encouraged and exhorted them to work out their salvation with fear and trembling. He had just kind of told them, you know, sanctification just doesn't happen. It requires work. It requires work to be sanctified, to grow in our Christianity. In verse 12, he said, 12 and 13, therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure. And then in today's passage, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among you whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. The bottom line is, the sinful world complains and argues, or disputes, grumbles and mutters. We're not to do that. That's the bottom line. And over the next 2 weeks, by the way, this was going to be one sermon, but it got to be long enough that it became two, so this week we'll only go through verse 14. But over the next couple of weeks, that's the bottom line that we're going to be looking at. There's lots and lots of complaining in this world. We live in a culture of entitlement. And that culture we live in of entitlement causes lots of discontentment. If you think about it, we are entitled to many things we think. You know, my children, I think about Sarah. She was an only child for a while. As an only child, everything revolved around her, not in just one household, but two, because her mother and I were divorced at a young age for her, so two households centered around Sarah. So she learned to become very discontent if she didn't get what she wanted. Another reason for large families, by the way, just as a side note. Because if you have large families, then the children learn to function inside of the family. If you have small families, the family learns to focus and function on the needs of the children. But there's, in this country, we think, as citizens, we think we're entitled to certain things. And that sense of entitlement causes us often to complain and grumble and be discontent. We always want more and more. Nothing's ever good enough. It must have been true then as well, because Paul talks about the complaining world around them. But God's children are to not be that way. God's children are not to be complaining and disputing. God's children are to be different. So verse 14 starts out, do all things. Do all things. All what things? All things we do as Christians. Earlier in this letter, Paul had said in Philippians 1, 29 and 30, for to you it has been granted on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now here is in me. So, also to suffer for his sake. So suffering. So Paul says, you're to suffer without complaining and disputing. That's part of all things. Then the verse we just read, therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you both to will and do for His good pleasure. You're to work out your salvation. So do all things. All things are suffer. All things are work. Work out your salvation. Be sanctified through efforts of your own. And as you do that without complaining and grumbling. What are all things? 1 Corinthians 10:31. Therefore, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Do all. If you're a believer, if you have a regenerate heart, if you're a child of God, then you're to do everything you do without complaining and grumbling. All things. Everything. Everything we do. At home, at work, at church, with family and friends. Everything we do. Eat, sleep. Everything we do, beloved, as we are being sanctified, we should do all those things without complaining and grumbling. All of the sacrifices, all of the discomfort, all of the things we have to give up, all of the relationships that get damaged, all of those things. We're to do all of those things. Everything that happens to us as we are becoming more holy, there's nothing that doesn't fit inside of that. All things. Paul says then, stop complaining. Stop complaining. Many of us need to listen to this message today very intently. One, if you're saved, I want you to listen to it very intently as to how you complain and that you would stop. Some of the rest of you who aren't right with God, that you can't stop complaining because all you do is have a sense of entitlement. And so therefore you're just going to keep complaining and grumbling and complaining and grumbling your whole life. And understand that has you separated from God. But if you're right with God, then you can stop and you must stop. Stop complaining. Do all things without complaining and disputing. Without complaining. The Greek word for complaining is gagousmas. Gagousmas. And it means a murmur. Murmuring, muttering, complaint. A secret debate. A secret displeasure not openly avowed. Complaining not just outwardly. More inwardly is what this word talks about. Not just openly. So lots of people complain out loud and openly. Paul's saying, don't complain internally. Don't have secret complaints. Don't mutter and murmur and mumble. Nobody really hears it. You're just doing it inside. Some of you have learned not to out loud complain. But you walk around complaining all the time, constantly, most of the time internally. Often, if not most of the time. But you don't do it out loud, so you think somehow you've been sanctified. No, it's just behavior modification. Paul says those inward secret debates, that muttering, that mumbling, that murmuring, don't do it. That word, gagousmas, is used in Acts 6:1. Lots of complaining. Now in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists because their widows were neglecting the daily distribution. The Hebrews were complaining because they weren't being treated fairly by the Hellenists. Remember the laborers who went and worked in the vineyard, and the ones who came early in the morning and worked all day were paid the same amount as the ones who came in the 11th hour and worked 1 hour. They all got one denarius. Then here's what happened. And when they had received it, they complained against the landowner. The ones who had been there all day muttered and mumbled and complained because it wasn't fair. This isn't fair. I worked all day. They worked 1 hour. He gets the same as I get. That's not fair. Muttering, complaining, grumbling. When Jesus had told many of his followers, remember he had followers that were following him. He told them they have to eat his flesh and drink his blood. And they said, that's a hard saying. Who can understand that? Verse 61 of John 6. When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples complained about this, he said to them, does this offend you? Those followers muttered and mumbled and complained about how tough it was, that teaching. They left Jesus, they muttered and mumbled their way right off, leaving Jesus, never to follow him again. Sidebar, that's why the word disciple in the Bible does not always mean a believer. Disciple is just a learner. And many of those that were following Jesus when he taught that, they left him and followed him no more. But that's how much their complaints, they were complaining. 1 Corinthians 10:10, Paul's describing the Israelites in the desert, and he uses that word, gagusmas. 1 Corinthians 10:10, nor complain, as some of them, the Israelites, also complain and were destroyed by the destroyer. What we're going to understand out of this is that gagusmas is this internal muttering and mumbling and complaining. It's that secret debate that goes on inside of you. Oh, this isn't fair. This isn't right. Whether you're saying it out loud or not, and sometimes you do. But Paul's talking about that internal thing that you walk around doing. Then he says, disputing. Do all things without complaining and disputing. The Greek word for disputing is dialogismas. Dialogismas. And it means this. What is reasoned, content or result of one's thinking, and then dispute or argument. So it's this reasoning that goes on in your head, and the result of that reasoning that then leads to a dispute or an argument. Again, it's what is reasoned, content or result of one's thinking, dispute or argument. This word has to do with that inner reasoning that we do that then leads us to be wise in our own eyes and then dispute with God. We don't like what's going on in our lives. We don't like doing all things. We don't like all things that are happening to us. Therefore, we reason in our heads why it isn't right, why it isn't fair. So we mumble and we murmur and we grumble and we reason in our heads about how, and we just be wise in our own eyes. God, I don't like the way you're looking at this deal. I don't like what you're having happen in my life. I don't like the consequences of being a Christian. I don't like the byproduct. Take it away from me. This word, dialogismas, Romans 14:1. Receive one who is weak in the faith, but do not to disputes over doubtful things. Some of these believers were passing judgment on others because of the opinions they had reasoned in their mind. So they were passing judgment. He's saying, don't, those reasons in your mind, dialogismos. James 2:4, same word. Have you not shown partiality among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Evil reasonings. When people were treating wealthy people better than they were treating poor people, they had reasoned in their mind it was better to treat the wealthy people better. Give them a best seat. And that was what they had come up with in their mind. That's that inner thinking that causes them then to do something they ought not be doing. Paul says, do all things without murmuring, muttering, deciding in your head, and then disputing about it. He's saying to them, as you're working out your salvation, because remember back to verses 12 and 13, as you're working out your salvation, do all those things that go with being sanctified without muttering and mumbling and complaining and disputing against God for what is happening to you or for what is happening around you. Again, some of us need to really be listening to this today. Because you have a tendency to walk around complaining and grumbling for the things that go on in your life. Philippians 4:11 and 12. Paul says, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Paul faced lots of difficult circumstances. We've looked at this before, but lots of difficult circumstances for Paul. But he didn't complain with emotional grumbling or with intellectual disputing. He didn't emotionally grumble, he didn't intellectually dispute. It's sinful for us to murmur and to mutter and to dispute with God about the things that are going on in our life. This sin of complaining started a long, long time ago. Who do you think the first complainer was? Adam. First complainer was Adam. Genesis 3:12. God had just questioned Adam, "Why did you eat of the tree I told you not to eat from?" Here's Adam's reply. The man said, "The woman whom you gave me to be with, she gave me of the tree and I ate." Disputing with God, complaining. "You'd have given me a different wife, it never would have happened. You gave me that woman. Your fault." Disputing. "Not I have sinned. It's the woman you gave me. It's your problem, God. It isn't my fault." Later, Cain complained against God. He said, "My punishment that you're giving me for killing Abel is way too much." Genesis 4:13-14. And Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me." Basically, Cain saying, "This isn't fair. This is way more than I can bear." Yeah. Complaining and grumbling. Wah. Seriously, this is what's going on. First Adam, then Cain, then Moses complained to God. God had sent Moses to Pharaoh to say, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh had not let the Israelites go as quickly as Moses thought they should. Exodus 5:22-23. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all." Why are you sending me there? Nothing's happening. They aren't being delivered. Why did you send me? It's time for you to let them go. God, you're not doing what you said you'd do. Complaining and disputing with God. It sounds pretty stupid, huh? Well, we know how the story turns out. But Moses is sitting there in the middle of this saying, "I've gone now to Pharaoh 10 times, and he keeps not letting the people go. So I don't get it, God." So it might seem pretty stupid because we know the outcome, but in the middle of it, don't we do the same thing? God, it's not fixed yet. You told me to wash my wife through the word, and all it does is brings up fights. I'm not going to keep doing that, God. How often do you murmur and mutter and dispute with God about your circumstances? Just like Moses. So then God delivers the Israelites from Egypt, and he's drowned the pursuing Egyptians in the Red Sea. And he's delivered Israel from the bondage. So in Exodus 15, verses 1 through 18, Moses sings, and the Israelites sing a glorious song. They sing praises to the Lord. They're so thankful, and they're singing his praises because of their deliverance. But then 3 days in the wilderness, here's what happens. Exodus 15, 22 through 24. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and then they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink? What are we supposed to do? We want good water." Entitlement. We're entitled to good water. So what if you delivered us from bondage? So what if you took us across the Red Sea? So what if you drowned those that were pursuing us? We demand good water. Complaining. So then God made those waters sweet. So they've got to be done complaining now, right? Wrong. Exodus 16:2. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by pots of meat and we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. We're hungry! We would rather be in bondage as long as we got fed. Feed us! Never mind you delivered us from the bondage. Never mind you drowned the people that were pursuing us to kill us. Never mind that you gave us sweet water to drink. Now we want some food! They're continually complaining and grumbling. God saves us, beloved, from our bondage, our Egypt. And we come out of that bondage, oh, fix this, fix that. It shouldn't be this way, God. Why all these struggles? Why do people not like me? Why is my sin not going away? Why aren't you taking it away from me? Why do you allow people to be angry with me? Why are you causing me to have relational difficulty? He saves us from our bondage, our sin, our Egypt, and then we complain and we grumble. So, the Israelites, they finally get to the edge of the promised land. And they're just about to go into Canaan. And Joshua and Caleb and 10 other men go in to spy out the land, to check out Canaan. When they return, here's what happens, Numbers 13:30. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." So Caleb says, "Look, we can go do what God told us to do. We can go take that land." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." The 10 of the men came back saying, "I don't care what God said. I don't care that God promised us land. We can't take it. It's too tough. These guys are giants and they're going to take us over. They're going to devour us. It ain't worth it. We can't do it. We can't take the land. They're too big and strong." So, because of those 10 disputing and grumbling and complaining, here was the result. Now, before we read the result, I want you to think about something. In your life, when you start complaining and grumbling, does that not sometimes affect others? Don't you bring them right into your same little grumble and complaint? Right? Roy, you've given testimony. If you and Tammy are grumbling and complaining, by God's grace, this is much better in your lives. But grumbling and complaining, you'll get each other in the same grumble and complaint. It's exactly what happens here. These 10 come back and they grumble and they complain and they dispute against God and say, "We can't do what God told us we could do." Numbers 14:2. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, "If we had only died in the land of Egypt, if we only died in the wilderness, why has the Lord brought us this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt." Wah, wah, wah. Dispute, dispute, dispute. "We got a better plan. Let's go back to bondage. Let's get leaders that will take us back. Never mind what God said. Never mind what God's leaders that He's chosen have said." Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." So Caleb and Joshua say, "Listen, we can go do this." They're the voice of godly reason. And how do those people then respond? And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. So the complainers and grumblers, are you one of those people? You complain and grumble. When somebody comes to the voice of reason, and somebody comes to tell you what God has promised, and somebody tells you what God can do, do you get mad at them? Because you want to believe your own reasoning? You want to live out of your own emotional grumbling? That happens. People come with the voice of reason, a godly word in your life. They'll bring scripture into your life. They'll bring truth of who God is into your life. And because you're in the middle of complaining and grumbling, you'll get mad at them. You don't want to hear it. It's happened with some of you with me. I know, in our meetings. I will challenge you to trust God, and that will make you upset because I don't understand. I don't understand your disputing and your mumbling and your inner reasoning. And I don't acquiesce to it, so then you're mad at me. These Israelites rejected God's plan, they rejected God's chosen leaders, they rejected God Himself with their complaining. And they're disputing. The psalmist, remembering their complaining and disputing, in Psalm 106, 24, 25. Then they despised the pleasant land. They did not believe His word, but complained in their tents and did not heed the voice of the Lord. So what? Nice story. They shouldn't have complained and grumbled. Those bad Israelites. Shame on them. What was God's response to them? What was God's response to the complainers and the grumblers? Here was God's response. As you hear this, think about what He thinks of your complaining and grumbling and disputing. Numbers 14:11. Then the Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people reject me? How long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? I will strike them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they." Moses says, he prays basically, said, don't kill them. If you kill them, the other nations that see that you brought them out of Egypt and you just destroy them, that won't bring glory to you. It won't show your mercifulness and long-suffering. Verse 20, then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word. But truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all these men, these Israelites, who have seen my glory, because all these children that I have saved, who have seen my glory in their salvation, or maybe they haven't because they're not really saved. Because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me to the test now these 10 times and have not heeded my voice, they certainly shall not see the land of which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. Those grumblers and complainers did not see the promised land. God rejected them. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring him to the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. The only non-complainer and grumbler in the group, him and Joshua, he'll come in. The rest will not come into the promised land. I don't care if they think they're my people. They're not my people. To complain and dispute against me. They would not go into the promised land because they were complainers. Verse 26, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I have heard the complaints which the children of Israel make against me. I have heard the complaints that the people that hang out at Grace Fellowship Church have made against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in the wilderness. All of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except for Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. You shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. But your little ones, whom you said would be victims, I will bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and bear the brunt of your infidelity, until your carcasses are consumed in the wilderness. According to the number of days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, for each day you shall bear your guilt for 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. I, the Lord, have spoken this. I will surely do all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and they shall die. Now the men whom Moses sent out to spy the land, who returned and made all the congregation complain against him by bringing a bad report of the land, those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh remained alive of the men who went to spy out the land. The non-complainers lived and the complainers died. The complainers did not go into the promised land. Their carcasses died in the wilderness. God is serious about this complaining thing and this disputing thing and this grumbling thing. He's serious about it. God punished these complainers greatly. God rejected them. Paul refers to those Israelite complainers and grumblers in 1 Corinthians 10, 9 and 10. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them, those Israelites, also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them, the Israelites, also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. We mustn't tempt God in that way. We are to do all things without muttering and murmuring and disputing and having those inner conversations that cause us to be in dispute with God for what's happening in our lives. Whining and disputing and being wise in our own eyes. We mustn't do that. God's serious about this. Jude warns against complaining. Jude 16. These are grumblers, complainers, walking according to their own lusts. They want what they want. If they don't get what they want, they complain and grumble. And they mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage. Complaining against God is a nasty sin. We mustn't do it. We're not to complain against other believers either. That's complaining against God. James 5, 9. James says, do not grumble against one another, brethren. Listen, this is something to listen to. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Peter says in 1 Peter 4, 9, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. Beloved, we are to willingly, joyfully submit to God's providential will in our lives. If we murmur, mutter, complain, see, I am so tired of my spouse, your saved spouse, complaining and grumbling about your saved spouse. We're not to grumble against one another. When we do that, we are in serious sin that God hates. That God will reject. 1 Corinthians 10, 11. Now all these things happen to them as examples. Who he's talking about, again, is the Israelites. What we just went through. Plus other things. All these things happen to them as examples. And they were written for our admonition upon who the end of the ages have come. The complaining Israelites were kept from the promised land. Some of them died by the serpent that were complaining. The only ones who went in were Caleb and Joshua. And that was written so we wouldn't be those kind of complainers. We would learn from their example. That if we think we're God's people, if we're not going to be rejected, then we won't complain and grumble and dispute. And be upset about and not want to accept the things that come into our lives as a result of our sanctification, as a result of being saved. As we become more holy, all the things that require us to become more holy, we complain about. We will be rejected. This was written for our own admonition. Stop complaining. Stop complaining. Or you might end up like the Israelites, dying, your carcasses dying in the wilderness, never entering the promised land. Jeremiah says in Lamentations 3:39, why should a living man complain? A man for the punishment of his sins. If it's true that all men, unsaved men, how much more true of it is of us? We are not to be complaining. Do all things. Work out your salvation, beloved. If you're right with God, you are being talked to right now by God, by the Apostle Paul, by me. You are to stop complaining and grumbling and disputing and muttering and murmuring. And if you're unable to do that, then you might, your carcass might die in the wilderness. I'm hopeful that God is working in hearts this morning to show you the sickeningness and the heinousness of the sin of complaining and grumbling against God. And that we'll stop it. Philippians 2, verses 14 through 16. Do all things without complaining and disputing. Now next week we're going to see the reasons that you may be blameless, may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run and labored in vain. Today we saw, do all things without complaining and disputing. It is time to stop. God will reject those who complain and dispute against Him. It's time to stop. Paul was writing this Philippian church of fairly mature believers, and he's saying, I'm going to warn you, don't do this. Don't complain and grumble as you work out your salvation. As those things that start happening in your life because God has saved you, be joyful, willingly accepting God's providential desire inside of that. Closing thought. As we work to be more sanctified, as we endure suffering, as we work out our salvation, we are to do all things without complaining. God will not tolerate complaining. How are you doing all things without muttering and grumbling? Really? Really, how are you doing? See, because even if you don't say it out loud, you know what's going on in here. I hear some of your complaints. I'm so tired of my husband's poor leadership. Wham. I'm so tired of my wife's lack of submission. Wham. It is so hard for me to stop my sin. You don't have any idea. Wham. It isn't easy having family and friends disown me and dislike me. Wah. I don't want these things that are happening in my life. Wah. Oh, I gotta go read my 10 list again. Wah. Oh, another day I gotta get together with the body. Wah. We're chuckling because I'm saying wham, but think about how you think. I hear some of your whining and complaining. God won't tolerate it. God doesn't tolerate it. We are commanded right here. The Apostle Paul, it was an imperative. It wasn't a suggestion. It was do all things. That's an imperative. It's a command. Not if you want to. Do all things without complaining. All these things as you're working out your salvation with fear and trembling. All these things as you're being sanctified. All these things as you're being the Christian you were saved to be. All these things as you're preaching the gospel. Do all these things and don't complain. God will not tolerate it. Don't pass over this and say, oh well, I do some complaining and grumbling, I'll try to get better. Stop it! Stop complaining. Y'all have in your note-taking guide, there's a section that says notes. I think there usually is. I didn't look. Tammy, there's one there, right? A blank page that says notes on the back of the note-taking guide. We're going to take a few minutes, and I want you to write out on that note section what you complain about. Write out what you complain about, what you grumble about, what you're wise in your own eyes about, what you dispute with God about. I named a few areas, but some of you don't like the fact that all the money you have is His. What is it? What is it you complain and grumble about? Okay, I'm going to stop you now, but you can keep writing if you want. And I would encourage you to make that list as long as it needs to be. And now, here's my encouragement. Seek God's forgiveness. Humble yourself before the Lord and seek His forgiveness for your complaining, disputing, murmuring, muttering heart, and beg for His mercy. Each of those things you listed, seek His forgiveness for your sin of complaining and grumbling and disputing. As we work to be more sanctified, as we endure suffering, as we work out our salvation, we are to do all things without complaining. How are you doing, really? I'm pretty sure I read a different closing thought because there was a change, though. I know that because I got an email on my change. As we work out our salvation with fear and trembling, as we work to be more sanctified, as we endure suffering for His name's sake, we are to do all things without complaining. God will not tolerate complaining. If you think this is too harsh a preaching, or if you think it's not true, the statement I'm making, God will not tolerate complaining, just look what happened to the Israelites. Seek His forgiveness for your grumbling and complaining. Humble yourself before the Lord. Beg for His mercy. Go boldly to the throne of grace to obtain His grace in this time you need. His mercy and His grace. For all the ways that you sin against Him as you complain and grumble. Gracious Heavenly Father, Father, I seek Your forgiveness for our complaints and our grumblings. Father, I think about how You've delivered us from our bondage of sin. And yet we still think it's okay to talk back to You. We still think it's okay to be in disagreement with what You've allowed to happen into our lives. Father, that Your word promises will happen in our lives. We don't like it. Father, it's not okay that we don't like it. And I beg your forgiveness and your mercy on us. Father, some in here today, all they can do is complain and grumble because they don't have salvation. Father, just like those Israelites in the wilderness, they're so self-focused and self-consumed. Father, I pray that you would grant them repentance, Father, that they would fall on the finished work of your Son, Jesus. Father, for those of us who you have made your children, that we would stop complaining and grumbling. Father, for your glory, that we could preach the gospel. Father, how do we preach the gospel while we're complaining and grumbling? Show us our sin, Father. Break our hearts as we cry out for mercy and forgiveness. Amen.